I'm Adam Spiegelman. This is number 0128, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0128. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet John Leake, who is the author of Cold a Long Time, an Alpine Mystery. He was hired by the parents of a pro hockey player from Canada who disappeared without a trace after taking a snowboarding lesson in Austria.
His parents said, you know, we know that he was last seen at this ski resort, and then it's like, you know, vanished without a trace. What on earth happened to him? And they couldn't understand why the local police just didn't seem interested in the case. For example, and this was the thing that made me decide to really jump into this, to the simple question, did he return his snowboarding equipment? I mean, you think that would be a great clue.
Donna Anderson is the author of Love Fraud. It tells the story of her own marriage to a sociopathic con artist. How long did she date this guy before marrying him?
Actually, not long enough, that's for sure. I actually started corresponding with him and only about 3 weeks later met him in person. And he just swept me off my feet. And he proclaimed that I was the woman he was waiting for all his life. He had never met anybody like me. He thought we would make such a wonderful team. So it was only about a week after we met in person, which was about a month after we started corresponding, that he proposed and I accepted.
James McGibney is the man behind the site KarmaVille.com.
We're going to have every day there's going to be good karma articles, bad karma articles, celebrities who have good karma, bad karma. They'll be up there so you can read their stories. Or you can submit karma about someone. So you may have seen that, you know, heard that your best friend paid someone's rent for a month because the person was down on their luck. That's a good karma story. You can post your friend on KarmaVille so other people can read that and they would be inspired to go do something as well.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff and, of course, an idiot of the day. The guest Slater, the person who told you this was show number 0128, was Adam Spiegelman, who is the host of Proudly Resents, a fun show online, and you can also check out the website at proudlyresents.com. He's also the producer of a fun game show that you can hear online called Dream Tweet. Very fun show, as a matter of fact. Both are available on iTunes and also on Stitcher. And I thank you very much, Adam, for taking the time to do the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program. And speaking, by the way, of Stitcher, just want to pass on the fact that you can now hear the Stuff File program on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, Kindle Fire, and beyond. On demand and on the go, so if you don't have Stitcher, you can simply download it for free at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And let's get right to the Stuff File news, shall we? Well, he could be the world's worst driver under 30. However, we may never know. That's because the 28-year-old from Leicester, Britain, has never gotten to take the actual driving test because he's failed the written part of the exam 92 times. In Britain, written part of the exam comes first, just like it does here. And at $48 a pop, our friend has spent almost $4,500. The hour-long written test includes multiple-choice questions about road rules, plus a hazard perception test where participants have to spot developing road dangers on a driving video. Now, I know there is the old axiom, what is it, if at first you don't succeed, try again, but isn't there a point where the state should just step in and say, hey, look, son, here's a bus pass. This isn't going to happen ever. Just for all of our safety. That's all I'm saying. In Willow, Alaska, 85-year-old Dorothea Murphy saved her husband's life when she used a shovel to fend off an agitated moose who was stomping her husband to death. 82-year-old George Murphy says he would have surely died if not for the brave actions of his wife. George, a pilot who flew for 3 decades for the Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, was hiking with his golden retriever near the Willow Airport when he saw the moose and dove into the snow. But the moose started stomping him. Dorothea, who is all of 5 feet tall and weighs 97 pounds, grabbed a big shovel and hit the moose in the body and also in the head. She then ran for help, and George was rushed by helicopter to the Anchorage Hospital. He is listed in good condition with a gash to his head. So, Grandma 1, Moose nothing. You'll think twice next holiday season when you sing Grandma Gotten Over by a Reindeer, won't you? And you also know Dorothea is never going to let George forget this. Ever. Okay, funny how words and their meanings change over the years. Canyon Schools District in Utah has decided against using the term cougars as a mascot for a new high school in large part because, well, you know why. Superintendent David S. Doughty said they decided to go with chargers instead, despite a poll showing 26% of the students were in favor of using the cougar. Doughty says public comments reflect a desire to be different, but he also notes that some see the word cougar as carrying a negative double entendre. So, there you go. By the way, no word on whether or not the school district will continue to don their gay apparel during the holiday season. And back to the UK for another story. Teenager Rory McInnes painted a giant phallus on the roof of his parents' West Berkshire mansion, apparently after watching a program about Google Earth. The BBC delicately describes it as a comedy painting, saying it was there for a whole year before his parents found out. But it is not the first time the stunt has been tried. Back in 2006, a British tabloid, The Sun, reported that, quote, pranksters drew a willy on the roof of a top school. That was in Teesside. And that one went unnoticed until it appeared on Google Earth. Similarly, for the benefit of Google Earth, pupils drew a 6-meter penis in Weed Killer on school fields and the playing fields in Southampton back in 2007. You know, if anybody else is watching us from outer space, they're going to have some pretty strange questions to ask about us. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the program, in Panama City, Florida, a 15-year-old girl called police in the middle of the night and asked to be put in a Christian children's shelter after she heard her mother and her mother's boyfriend having sex. The kid told police she felt disrespected. An officer went to the house where the girl was calling from at 4 a.m. The mother explained to the officer that while their bedrooms are next to each other, she didn't intend to wake up her daughter. The 15-year-old acknowledged that there was no form of abuse or neglect in the house, but was upset by what she heard. So the officer had her speak with a care worker at the children's home in Panama City, but she ultimately decided that she would stay with her mother. Oh, dinner time discussions are going to be rather awkward for a while in this household, I think. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. John Leake is the author of Cold a Long Time, an Alpine Mystery. It centers around a pro hockey player from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, who vanished without a trace in Europe. John is on the line with us right now to share some of the story. Hi, John.
Hi, Peter. How are you doing?
Oh, just tickety-boo. It's nice to have a chance to talk to you again. We spoke on my old radio show about 4 years ago, almost 5 years ago now, when you had the book Entering Hades, The Double Life of a Serial Killer. So it seems to be you're into these mysterious cases.
Well, my first book was about this guy who... it took place mostly in Vienna, Austria, about this guy who was a writer, a freelance journalist, and also, unbeknownst to everyone, a serial killer. And he was kind of the twist to the story was that he was interviewing the police in the capacity of a freelance journalist about his own crimes. And so that kind of drew me into the story. It was true. Happened to be living in Vienna at the time, and I just found that particular twist to the story particularly weird. And so I ended up researching and writing that book. You interviewed me about it, and it was really because of that book that I was contacted by the parents of this young man, Duncan McPherson, from Saskatoon. They had heard that I'd spent time in Austria and had experience with the local police and the local courts and so forth, and I thought that maybe I could help them in their ongoing quest to figure out what had happened to their son. They knew that he disappeared in Austria, and so they thought maybe I could help them. His disappearance was not properly investigated, and they thought, well, you know, maybe this English-speaking guy, but who can speak German and sort of knows the scene, can help us to figure out what happened to Duncan. So I got kind of intrigued by the story they told me and started looking into it, and then 2.5 years later, I've just now published my book about the case.
You mentioned that it wasn't properly investigated. Why was that?
Well, that was the weird thing, is his parents said, you know, we know that he was last seen at this ski resort, and then it's like, you know, vanished without a trace. I mean, it's like, what on earth happened to him? And they couldn't understand why the local police just didn't seem interested in the case. They, for example, and this was the thing that made me decide to really jump into this, to the simple question, did he return his snowboarding equipment? I mean, you think that would be a great clue. Here we have got this ski resort. In order to get to the slope, you have to ride a gondola up to a very, very high mountain station. And the rental shop is there in the gondola station, and there was a procedure. If someone doesn't return his equipment and pick up his shoes and his driver's license or his credit card, which people leave as a deposit for the equipment, then that would be a clue that he got hurt on the slope, that something happened to him on the slope. On the other hand, if he did return his equipment and pick up his things, then that would mean he came off the slope and went somewhere else. Well, so the parents have this bright idea. Let's try and establish whether or not he returned his snowboarding equipment. And the police just said, well, we can't figure it out. We don't know. We're getting conflicting stories about that. We don't know if he returned his equipment. And then later, the police said, well, we have established that he did return his equipment. So at that point, the parents think, well, he must have come off the slope and gone somewhere else. Well, 14 years later, guess what melts out of this glacier ski slope in the middle of the ski slope with the snowboarding equipment? The body of Duncan McPherson. So then the question becomes, well, now, wait a minute. You guys said you did establish that the snowboarding equipment was returned, but here his corpse is melted out in the middle of the ski slope with the equipment. So when I saw that, I thought, wow, there's something really weird going on here. I mean, it became fairly clear at that point that people had concealed his death on the ski slope. So then the question becomes, why? Why didn't they just come forward at the very beginning and say, you know, we got to be frank with you, he didn't return his gear?
So is it possible now, 14 years later, with his body thawing out on a mountain somewhere, to perform a proper autopsy to determine cause of death?
Well, that was the funny thing. So the body melts out. So just to reiterate the timeline here, he vanishes in 89. And then his body melts out in July of 2003. So when these events were happening, it was a few years ago, 2003, the parents hear that his body's melted out. It was identified with some cards in his wallet. And they think, oh, at last we will know what happened to our son. But then the same thing happens again. There's no autopsy. There are no police officers present at the scene when his body is recovered. A couple of slope maintenance workers pack his body out of the ice, throw it in the body bag. The local prosecutor closes the case without even knowing the cause of death. And a forensic doctor in Innsbruck, this is Innsbruck, Austria, which is about 20 miles away from the ski resort, he tells the parents, well, I've only received the order to identify the body. I did not receive an order to conduct a forensic examination, so I can't tell you the cause of death with scientific certainty, but I believe that he probably fell into a crevasse and died of asphyxiation. And he said it's kind of like an avalanche victim. You've got snow that comes in on top of you. You can still breathe, but you slowly asphyxiate from carbon dioxide buildup, which is not in a terribly unpleasant way to die. So the parents are thinking, okay, he fell into a crevasse on this glacier. It's a controlled ski slope, so it raises the question, why wasn't this closed? I mean, why was there this hazard in the middle of the ski slope? But at least they think, okay, we know now he fell into a crevasse, and then he probably died when he was buried with snow, like an avalanche victim. But then the plot thickens, because they are later able to acquire some images of his body, just simple digital photographs that the doctor had snapped, had taken of the body as it lay on a dissection table. And these images then became the big clue, the images of his body and the snowboarding equipment, which Mr. McPherson, the father, was able to obtain. Snowboarding equipment and the images of his body then became our clues. And this is what I spent about 2 years analyzing with several forensic people and a ski accident investigator, and we were able to piece together what happened to Duncan. But if I tell you, Peter, then it's going to completely spoil the story, and no one is going to want to buy my book.
Which is Cold, A Long Time, An Alpine Mystery, so you don't want to give away the ending. But I do want to ask this question, and that is, with what seems to be, and we just have about a minute here, what seems to be some sort of a sloppy or lack thereof investigation, it makes me wonder, I mean, here are parents who are going to all lengths to try and find the answers as to what happened to their son. Are there other Duncan McPhersons out there?
Well, it's interesting that you ask, because when the parents first arrived at this Glacier Ski Resort, first of all, they had, by a bizarre coincidence, the mother had this intuition that Duncan must have stopped somewhere in the Innsbruck area. They knew that he wanted to visit a friend of his in northern Italy, and they kind of inferred that he must have driven through the Innsbruck area. And so they were pursuing this lead and not getting any help from the police. And on four different occasions, as they're driving all over Europe, they actually came very close to where his car was parked the whole time. Well, the car was a weird clue, too, because they had been asking, is it possible he had a car crash in the mountains? And the police said, no, that's impossible, because any car abandoned anywhere in the mountains is considered an indication that something has happened to its driver. We've got a lot of people climbing and hiking and wandering off. And if the car is left sitting in the same place for several days, well, that's a clue that something's happened to him. So all the people around here are very, very alert to an abandoned car. Well, when the parents, Mr. and Mrs. McPherson, on their own hook, when they finally find the car, they discover it's been sitting in the gondola station parking lot for 6 weeks without anyone reporting it. And that was the other thing. The moment I saw they took a photograph of the car on the day they discovered it, it's just sitting all by itself in this parking lot there day after day after day for 42 days, and none of the personnel at the ski resort reported it.
There are a lot of...
Well, why not?
Yeah.
So when the parents are already wondering, well, what on earth is going on here? No one tells them that tourists falling into glacier crevasses is something that happened, that had happened before. In fact, it had happened on the exact same ski slope on which Duncan was last seen, exactly to the day 1 year before.
A lot of questions, a lot of mysteries.
Yeah.
There's a lot going on here, and we're just about out of time. People can find out more information by going into the book and reading this story about Duncan McPherson, or the search for him. The book is called Cold a Long Time, An Alpine Mystery. It's written by John Leake. And John, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thank you. I enjoyed it. It was good chatting with you again.
John Leake, the author of Cold a Long Time, An Alpine Mystery. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0128, and you'll find links to John's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly.
You're listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's the Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come in the program, we will talk to the author of Love Fraud. Plus, we will meet the founder of Karmaville.com. And of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. And again, reminder that The Stuff File program is now on Stitcher, the award-winning provider of news and talk radio for your mobile phone. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. And now back to The Stuff File news. It would seem that the fine folks at Ferrari don't like it when you mess with their cars. Dan Colley of Manchester, England, turned his Ferrari into the world's fastest limousine by cutting it in half and adding a 9.5-foot middle section that he hand-built out of carbon fiber. His new Ferrari is now 20 feet long and comfortably seats 8, but because it's only about 350 pounds heavier than the original car, it can still perform at typical Ferrari speed. But the Italian supercar manufacturer is suddenly threatening legal action against Colley unless he removes all Ferrari insignia from the car. Colley says he's shocked because he claims he specifically asked the Ferrari folks if he could go ahead with the project, and they said that they agreed he could. Well, you know, no one really needs a limo that can go that fast, although I'm certain President Kennedy would beg to differ. And while we're on that topic, the white hearse used to transport President John F. Kennedy's body following his assassination in Dallas sold for $176,000 and was purchased by Stephen Tebow, a car collector and real estate developer from Boulder, Colorado. He plans to include it in a collection of cars. He has about 400 cars in Colorado. Now, the 64 Cadillac hearse carried Kennedy's body as well as First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy from Parkland Memorial Hospital to Air Force One at Dallas's Love Field for the flight back to Washington on November 22, 1963. Other cars in the collection include a 1965 Rolls-Royce, custom-made for John Lennon, a taxi used in the TV show Seinfeld, and a Jeep that Frank Sinatra used on his ranch. Tebow said he had expected to see the hearse sell from anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million, so he wasn't planning on bidding, but he jumped in when he saw the bids weren't likely to go that high. As a collector, he says he tried to buy significant vehicles whenever possible and has plans to turn his car collection into a museum. Something else that might end up in a museum. This is irony at its finest. Two guns believed to have been used by infamous bank robbers Bonnie and Clyde sold for $210,000 at an auction in Kansas City. Amazingly, that's far more money than the notorious duo ever stole during their entire criminal career. The guns were purchased by an anonymous online bidder from the East Coast. The weapons, a .45 caliber fully automatic Thompson submachine gun, better known as a Tommy gun, and an 1897 Winchester 12-gauge shotgun, are believed to have been seized from the outlaw couple's Joplin, Missouri hideout back in 1933. Two law enforcement officers died during a shootout at the Joplin apartment where the couple and members of their gang were holed up, but all the members of the Clyde Barrow gang escaped. So, there you go. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Loma Linda, California is not like any other town that you might know. There's not a single liquor store, and it's been illegal to smoke inside city limits for almost 3 decades now. The tiny hillside paradise prides itself on its devotion to health and spiritual well-being. Most of the population of 21,000 are Seventh-day Adventists, and they're also vegetarians. So it didn't go over so well with the locals when news came that McDonald's was coming to town. Now a group of doctors are banding together to craft a ballot measure to eliminate the possibility of any fast food joint coming to Loma Linda. Dr. Wayne Deisinger said, "McDonald's doesn't fit the Loma Linda brand of health and wellness. Besides, if you really gotta, there's half a dozen McDonald's restaurants within 5 miles, all outside the city limits, and the town already has a Carl Jr.'s and Del Taco. But something about the Golden Arches popping up alongside the town's rolling hills is more than some can take. The city council so far has taken its chances, voting 3-2 to approve the McDonald's as part of a larger development of a vacant lot a block from City Hall. But many say if Mickey D's gets approved, the council members will regret it come Election Day. Threatening their little oasis of health. Yes. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Donna Anderson is the author of Love Fraud, the true story of her marriage to a sociopathic con artist. She joins us on the line right now. Hi, Donna.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us.
Thank you very much.
A very brave woman to share this kind of story with the entire world. How did you end up meeting this guy?
Well, I actually met him on the internet, although I didn't think that it would be a problem relationship because he lived near me. A lot of people caution you when getting involved on the internet not to get involved with long-distance relationships, and that wasn't the case at all. He lived, like, right up the road, so that's how it started.
Now, how long did you date before you got married?
Well, actually, not long enough, that's for sure. I actually started corresponding with him and only about 3 weeks later met him in person. And as I said, he lived in the area, so it wasn't like far away. And he just swept me off my feet. And he proclaimed that I was the woman he was waiting for all his life. He had never met anybody like me. He thought we would make such a wonderful team. So it was only about a week after we met in person, which was about a month after we started corresponding, that he proposed and I accepted. And unfortunately, this happens fairly often when someone gets involved with a sociopath. What happens is that they seduce you with this whirlwind romance and do something that we call love bombing, which is showering you with attention and proclaiming how much they want to be with you. And it's actually a fairly standard tactic, but I didn't know that at the time. I learned it much later after I realized what he was.
Oh, okay. So you're blinded by love, and it's a very quick romance. What about mm-hmm. what about your friends and family? Did anybody try to pull you aside and say, Donna, are you sure about this? Do you really know the guy? That kind of thing.
Actually, no. And you have to understand, I mean, I was 40 years old when this happened. It wasn't like I was a young kid or anything. And I had been dating for a long time and had yet to marry. And so I was obviously happy. And nobody wanted to rain on my parade. Nobody wanted to tell me to be careful or anything. I mean, I later found out that they were talking among each other and saying, you know, what's going on here? But nobody said anything to me.
Okay, so when did you find out that he was literally a sociopath?
It wasn't until after I actually left him. So what happened was I was with him for 2.5 years. Now, during this time, he took $250,000 from me. He was cheating on me with 6 different women during that short amount of time. He had a child with one of these women, and then 10 days after I left him, he married the mother of the child, which turned out to be the second time that he committed bigamy. Now, I didn't know any of this until, I was aware that he was taking my money, but it wasn't like he was asking for it for himself. He always portrayed it as we were investing in our future together because he had all these big business plans. So I knew it wasn't working out, but he would always tell me, you know, just have faith. Everything's going to be fine. I'm going to take care of you. It's going to succeed. We're going to live in the lap of luxury, were the words that he used. And then I found out that he was cheating on me and had this child, so that's when I left him. But it wasn't until about 2 months after that when I started contacting the other women and found out that he was taking money from other women at the same time that I realized the whole thing was a scam right from the very beginning.
Okay, so sociopaths, they have no heart, they have no conscience, there's no remorse. That's basically what a sociopath is. So is there something about you, or have you thought about this and talking to the other women? Is there something about you that might make you a vulnerable target for such a character?
Anybody can be vulnerable to a sociopath. I mean, you have to understand that a sociopath lives their lives by exploiting other people. But when you meet them, they don't come off as a criminal necessarily. I mean, a lot of people have the preconception that all sociopaths are serial killers or that they're deranged, and this isn't true at all. Sociopaths know exactly what they're doing, and most of them don't kill anybody. I mean, a few are, and that's the reason for the stereotype, but the vast majority of sociopaths do not kill anybody. So what happens is they present themselves to be exactly the person that you're looking for, and this is part of their strategy. They figure out what you want and mold themselves to be that type of a person. Now, if anybody can be vulnerable, I mean, they do tend to pounce on vulnerabilities if somebody is lonely, if somebody is having a difficult time because they've lost somebody through death, if they're grieving, if they've had a bad prior marriage or abuse in a childhood. All of this makes people even more vulnerable to this type of predation. But on the other hand, a lot of women who get involved in these situations don't necessarily have those vulnerabilities. In fact, there's research that's been done that finds that women who get involved with these predators actually have three specific traits, which are not at all what you would expect. First of all, they tend to be very invested in relationships. In other words, they like to be helpful, and relationships are important to them. The other thing is they tend to be extroverted, and that would be me. I mean, I'm an extroverted person. Well, an extroverted person can sometimes be a little spontaneous, and so that's one of the things that can get you into trouble. And the other thing is that the women who tend to get involved in these relationships also tend to be highly cooperative, so that they're willing to kind of help the person along. And these are the traits that make women vulnerable.
As I said initially, you're a very brave woman to come forward and talk about this, write a book, have a website. A lot of people who are taken for a ride like this, they're kind of ashamed of the whole situation and don't want to go public. What made you decide to do this?
Well, I'm a college-educated journalist, and I had no clue what a sociopath was. So I figured that if I didn't know, other people didn't know either, and that has turned out to be the case. I launched my website, which is called lovefraud.com, back in 2005, and since then I have collected 2,800 cases of people who have been involved with sociopaths. And what you said is exactly true. I mean, most people are ashamed of what happened. I mean, there's a big prejudice in our society against being duped, and we were duped. So, sure, nobody wants to talk about that. And what I've found is that people come to Love Fraud and they are just so relieved to learn that they're not the only one this has happened to.
Where is your ex-husband now?
He's in Australia. He was originally an Australian man, but as I said, he was living right up the street from me. So we divorced. I took him to court and claimed fraud, that he had defrauded me in marriage. And actually won that. The judge awarded everything that was taken from me, which was $227,000 is what I claimed. The judge also awarded me $1 million in punitive damages, which is highly unusual in a divorce case, as you might imagine. And I chased my ex-husband around the world, trying to get him to pay up, but it was useless. I mean, he didn't have any money. And, you know, I finally found him in Australia, and at that point he had taken a job, which was unusual too, because the entire time I knew him he was pretending to be an entrepreneur and never took a job. But I managed to expose him. I exposed that he was a fraud, because one of the things he did besides taking money from people is that he pretended to be a war hero, that he had served in Vietnam and won all these medals and everything. Well, that was total fabrication. So I exposed him for the fraud that he was. He lost his job, and then I forced him into bankruptcy in Australia.
Hmm. Do you think he's still doing what he did to you and to others in Australia?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, since I launched lovefraud.com, 7 different women from Australia have contacted me to tell me that he tried to hook up with them, and they found Love Fraud, and because of that, ended the relationship.
Wow. It's an interesting story, to say the least. The book is called Love Fraud. It's written by Donna Anderson. And Donna, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us. I hope this whole experience hasn't turned you off the idea of finding love.
I'm remarried. I have a wonderful husband, and he actually is supporting me in my efforts to educate people about this disorder. And that's an important thing that I need to stress, is that even if we have these experiences, it is possible to overcome them. And I have, and so have many other people.
Donna, I thank you very much for being on the show with us.
Terrific. Thank you so much.
Donna Anderson, author of Love Fraud. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0128, and you'll find links to Donna's website, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order the book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Did you hear about the prisoner who filed a lawsuit because he said his food was too spicy? It really happened. So many inmates file frivolous lawsuits that states are now taking action to protect taxpayers. In some states, once a prisoner has filed 3 frivolous lawsuits, he has to start paying his own filing fees. That's right, they're usually exempt from paying the filing fees that everyone else has to pay. Let's be fair, it's actually rare for a judge to rule that a lawsuit is frivolous. So if a prisoner is found to have filed 3 frivolous cases, it shows a definite pattern of abuse, and he should have to pay his own filing fees after that. If states don't crack down on this problem, we're going to hear more about prisoners like Billy Roy Tyler. He filed 665 lawsuits in 1 year and sued everyone from the governor of Nebraska to the local dog catcher. With so many lawsuits like this, we need to keep our justice system from going to the dogs. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
If you're listening to this while walking with your iPod, make sure you look both ways before you cross the street. It's safety first on The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, now heard on Stitcher, we'll meet the founder of Karmaville.com. Plus, of course, there is indeed an idiot of the day. But right now, a couple more Stuff File news stories for you. Although seemingly passive, classical violinists do get angry too, especially if you're rude enough to leave your cell phone on during one of their concerts. Slovakian violinist Lukas Kmit was giving a solo recital at a Jewish Orthodox synagogue when someone's familiar, albeit stupid, Nokia ringtone went off just as Kmit was reaching the quietest passage of the piece. He paused for a second, glared at the offending patron, and then began playing an improvised version of the Nokia ringtone on his violin. His response was met with chuckles from the audience, who then burst into a round of applause. The whole thing has gone viral and racked up over 1 million hits on YouTube, and yes, I have put a link into the Stuff File webpage so that you can go to the YouTube page and listen and see it for yourself. Just go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0128, and you'll find links to that YouTube page. And finally, several people in Rock Island, Iowa were passing around something for everyone to admire, a 12-gauge shotgun. As various people posed with the gun for photos, the shotgun, obviously loaded, discharged, shooting Zachary Inman, age 18, in the leg. A police cruiser happened to be driving by shortly thereafter and someone flagged it down, and they called for an ambulance. The gun's apparent owner, Matthew Nazari, age 18, was charged with being a felon, of course, in possession of a firearm, and he may face other charges as they will be pending. You know, the "I was posing with it and it went off" excuse is even dumber than the usual "I was cleaning it" excuse. This could have ended up as idiot of the day, but it didn't. That comes a little later. But right now, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? You know, last year on the show, we introduced you to James McGibney, who has a website, cheaterville.com. Well, James is now back with a new site. This one is called karmaville.com, and he joins us on the line from Nevada. Hi, James.
Hi, thanks for having me. It's been a while. Appreciate it.
Thanks for being back on the show with us. So the new website, karmaville.com, everybody needs a little bit of karma. How exactly does the site work?
Yeah, so, I mean, as I remember the last time you and I were chatting, Cheaterville was getting a massive amount of PR. A lot of it good, but some of it bad. You know, basically, one of the big hits on Cheaterville was, okay, so I found out my significant other's cheating because I found proof in the post and the profile on Cheaterville. Now what? And we had Cupidville, which is an online dating site, but the last thing someone wants to do when they just found out their significant other has been cheated, you know, that they've been cheating, is go and date someone. So we needed to have that middle piece, and that's kind of where Karmaville is coming into play now. So when you find out your significant other is cheated, you can go to Karmaville and have a private chat session with a psychologist, a psychiatrist, a lawyer, a doctor, whatever you may need to kind of get your head straight, and then you can move on to Cupidville. Or let's say you're the cheater and you land on Cheaterville. Well, we have a plan for you now, too. And basically, you can go to Karmaville and you can have those private chat sessions and figure out what, you know, why you are cheating, why are you doing it over and over again, and, you know, how can you get through that and get better. And you can take a karma course, and if you complete the karma course, and if you're listed as a cheater on Cheaterville, we will not only remove your profile and make it invisible on Cheaterville, you too then can move on to Cupidville and date someone, you know, with a new clean slate, basically.
So there is a connection between basically all three websites, and I don't think we even ever talked about Cupidville.
Yeah, and, you know, I may have not launched it yet the last time we talked. I think I was just getting ready to. But, yeah, you know, basically it's the mind, body, and soul. We wanted to make sure that there was a full path for someone, not just, oh, my God, it just found the person I've been with for 10 years is cheating on me. Then what?
Okay, so besides having the opportunity to, say, talk to a counselor, what exactly happens on Karmaville?
That's one piece of it. And then we're going to have every day there's going to be good karma articles, bad karma articles, celebrities who have good karma, bad karma. They'll be up there so you can read their stories. Or you can submit karma about someone. So you may have seen that, you know, heard that your best friend paid someone's rent for a month because the person was down on their luck. That's a good karma story. You can post your friend on Karmaville so other people can read that, and they would be inspired to go do something as well, kind of paying it forward.
You mentioned celebrities. What kind of celebrities have either good or bad karma? Do you have examples on your site?
Well, you know, I know the obvious one that's on there for sure is Tiger Woods under the bad karma of, you know, those massive cheating allegations and his bad karma. Well, it wasn't allegations, it was true, but the bad karma from that was, you know, having horrible golf season for, you know, years in a row because of that. It definitely affected his game, and that's considered bad karma. And the good karmas, you know, could be there's a homeless gentleman, and I believe it's Detroit, that the money he received from, ass panhandling basically all day, he used to pay a woman's rent who was going to get kicked out and evicted. That's amazing good karma.
Wow. Okay. So do the people who are told, the people whose stories are told, the good karma stories on the site, are they aware of their stories being online? Do you contact them? How does that work?
We don't. So it's identical to Cheaterville. We're not responsible for the content that's on the site. We're not, you know, the authors of it. however, you have the option to not anonymously email that person who it's about. So you can go to our site and say, oh, wow, there's a good karma story about this person. And you can email it to them anonymously from Karmaville so they would get it and see it.
Now, are you I understand how Cheaterville would work and how Cupidville would work. But with Karmaville, are you not worried of somebody usurping your good intentions? In other words, what's preventing me from getting somebody in PR to put up some nice things about me in Karmaville?
Nothing. Yeah, and we're not judge or jury, so it's just like Cheaterville. You know, we urge all people to submit proof. So if you have a great karma story about someone and there's proof about it, you know, an article in the paper, another internet story somewhere else about that person, put that in there. So there's no doubt about it. But at the end of the day, it's up to the person who's reading it whether it's true or not.
So what kind of good karma stories? I mean, you mentioned a few already. Can you give us some other examples of some good karma stories out there?
You know, I think the biggest one is, and it's what we're going to get involved in too, is donations. You'll find that the Oprah Winfreys, the Barbara Streisands of the world, they donate heavily to various charities, and that's amazingly good karma. And we're going to get involved with that as well. So we're going to start taking on a charity every single week. And all money that comes in for that charity is 100% going to that charity. So we're going to get behind a different cause every week and see how much money we can raise for it.
We often hear, quite frankly, the bad things in life, that the old saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and it's always the negative story that gets out there. Here is a site that comes along that is trying to, I guess, exemplify the good side of life. Deep down, do you believe that there's more good than bad, and are you surprised by the amount of stories that you're getting on Karmaville.com?
You know, it's interesting because my comparison from Karmaville is Cheaterville, and, you know, Cheaterville absolutely erupted within 10 months. So, I mean, we haven't even been a year yet, and it's just completely out of control. And that's the bad side, unfortunately. And I think people have been looking for that good side because they saw how powerful Cheaterville was. And I think, you know, Karmaville is a great complement to that because there is a lot of good out there. And, you know, I guess it's going to remain to be seen. What is more popular in society, good or bad? Will Karmaville be more popular than Cheaterville, or will Cheaterville, you know, keep its meteoric rise? You know, it's a good case study either way, I'll tell you that.
Well, how long has Karmaville been, Karmaville.com been up online?
So it's a soft launch, so not even a week so far.
Okay.
And we already have, 15,000 people on Facebook. So it's actually not even going to be fully launched until this Friday.
And where were you with Cheaterville at that same point?
At that same point, as in the
as in where you are now with Karmaville.
where I am with Karmaville, you know, it's going to launch this Friday, and then with Cheaterville, we're over, you know, 350,000 subscribers and millions of hits, and it's a tough comparison. I'll tell you that Karmaville has a lot of catching up to do.
Well, what I'm getting at is Karmaville coming out of the gate as fast as Cheaterville did back then?
No. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, no. It is not. Cheaterville, keep in mind, I launched it on Valentine's Day. My apologies. Now I completely understand. My bad. But yeah, I launched that on Valentine's Day, so it was in the media that day. Instantaneous. I mean, within 30 days, Time Magazine's doing an article about us. So, Karmaville's going to have a tougher battle, but I do believe it's going to become just as popular of a site as Cheaterville has been.
So,
I hope so.
So you have Cupidville, you have Cheaterville, you have Karmaville. What's next?
Well, I was going to come up with a witty answer like nothing, I'm done, but actually I'm not. In the beginning of March, I'm launching CheaterU.com for Cheater University, and people are going to be able to have their own fraternities, sororities, and all I can say is, God forbid you cheat on someone who's a member of CheaterU. It's going to be a tough day.
You know, CheaterU has to have sweatshirts and T-shirts. You know that.
Well, let's be on that. If you go there right now, go to CheaterU.com, you'll see that our mascot is the honey badger. So, it's already been pretty big, and it hasn't even launched, and there's just so many people who have emailed us about it wanting to, you know, be a part of it immediately. So, that might be a monster in itself.
Well, I'd like to think when all is said and done, when you add up all the totals down the road, Karmaville will win out. I'll think positively.
I think it has a chance, and I agree with you. And you know what? I'm 100% behind that. I would love Karmaville to be the most popular site by far.
James, I thank you very much for taking the time to be on the program with us once again. Continued success with what you do.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
James McGibney, founder of Karmaville.com. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0128, and you'll find links to James's website. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Jonathan D. Miller, age 18, and Michon L. Bonds, age 19, of Carpentersville, Illinois, allegedly schemed to find expensive items for sale on Craigslist. When they found something they wanted, police say, they would make an appointment to come and see the item and then grab it and run. After stealing an $8,000 watch, police say that afternoon they posted an ad for it on Craigslist using the same photos that their victim had used. Officers simply agreed to buy the watch for $7,000, and Miller and Bonds showed up with it at the designated place and time, where they were arrested on various felony charges. In a previous incident, police say they stole a laptop computer which had anti-theft software which showed its location and photos of its surroundings. Now, why would they steal something they found on Craigslist only to try and sell it themselves on Craigslist with the same picture from the original owner? Never mind the whole laptop caper. One reason, and one reason only, they're idiots.
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0128. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And again, that's 0128. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.
been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Before we go, we'd like to leave you with a helpful instructional message from the National Association of People Who Have Trouble Walking and Chewing Gum at the Same Time. Step, chew, step, chew, step, chew, step, step. Oh, God. I always screw it up.